Drive Time on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Zurich. When investment performance matters, make sure your savings are with Zurich. Visit zurich.ie to find out more.
Now, on Monday morning, hundreds of thousands of teenagers across the country will walk back through the gates of their secondary school for the first time in 4 months. And while many are delighted to be packing the school bags, this school return is throwing up a wide range of issues, from school uniform rules, which we were discussing earlier, to anxiety and also mental health concerns. Now, as I say, earlier in the programme we were talking to Louise Bayliss from Spark, and she's concerned about a note that was circulated in one school. We've since heard of a second school who have also sent out an instruction to parents stating that if schools don't wear the proper shoes and no runners to school, they will be sent home. Parents are up in arms about this, and they feel that they have enough on their plates trying to support teenagers who've had a very tough few months, and school shoes are on the bottom of their list. Well, the Study Hub's Evelyn O'Rourke has been looking into the mental health issues that face secondary students, and she joins us now with the second part of this series. And Evelyn, last night on the programme we were talking about the mental health stresses and the concerns for younger teenagers who are returning to school, but this evening we're going to shift our focus to the senior cycle. And then we have this footwear issue this evening. I wonder, is this a reminder of how school life can affect our home life in so many different ways?
I know, it's fascinating, isn't it? I mean, Louise Bayliss was so clear earlier about the fact that parents are worried about big issues to do with social anxiety and mental health. And she said the parents have been talking to her about the footwear issue, really feel that a note like this, that it demonstrated, as she described, a lack of leadership. And she described it, I think, as passive aggressive. And certainly the people that I've been talking to for this series about from both home life and school life, they are totally focused on just supporting and encouraging a calm transition back into school life. And the first person I spoke to, Sarah, was Connor Brennan. And Connor was a sixth-year student last year in Gorey Community College, one of the biggest secondary schools in the country. He's now studying law and society in DCU, but he had vast experience of seeing students suddenly thrown into all the upheaval and uncertainty last year. And he was interesting to talk to about what he feels we need to do to support students now, what we've learned from it all. So here Connor talks a little bit more about that experience.
I remember being in one of their classes and actually watching it with the projector. I think there was very much a sense of it's all going to be over in 2 weeks. Like, I don't think we really understood the full scale of it. My biggest problem was when we moved to the online learning. I did everything but sat down at the computer, and I kind of felt more so a few weeks into it when teachers were starting to do classes more so. I felt it a lot easier to work then because you were basically plunked at home with no social interaction, because you're meeting your friends every morning, meeting them at lunch, and you've got none of that all of a sudden, and you've just got books and you're being told to study. So I think it's very hard for people to kind of study when they've just been thrown into a sort of unusual environment and basically just a do-it-yourself sort of approach.
What was the mood like generally amongst your peers? Because you've so many different students from different walks of life with access to different levels of digital technology and support and devices and all that stuff. When you look back now, what do you think it was like for your classmates during that time?
Well, I think there's definitely an element among some people that, oh, great, another 2 weeks off. But then there was an element of some people, the panic and the fear that set in. And then I'd say there was three kind of groups of people. And then the others would have been, well, we have to just make the best of a bad situation and get on with it. I think no one thought we were going to not have a Leaving Cert. I remember talking to Bertie Ahern there for my Leaving Cert Politics and Society project, and him even saying that the Leaving Cert is probably going to go ahead. Like, at the start of it, it was definitely a fear of the virus. And then I think that kind of calmed down, and more so anxiety towards, would the exams go ahead? It definitely put pressure on people who felt anxious. But the Leaving Cert is a stressful time for young people. And then this extra layer of stress, I think, could have been the breaking point for some people.
Do you think we did enough to support you and your peers when you look back now?
I think we did the best that we can. I think hindsight is a very, you can say, oh, well, we should have done this, we should have done that. But we were in the midst of a global pandemic where our priority was really stay at home to save lives at the start. We've learned so much about this virus and the months after. I think the people that were most left behind were people in rural areas and people from lower socioeconomic backgrounds that didn't have access to the devices and digital technologies, or I would have known a few people that would have been maybe sharing a smartphone between three siblings, and that made it extremely difficult for them to learn. So I think one of the main things we need to do is give students certainty. Like, there can't be a situation where students are put into school and then they're taken out 2 weeks later again. Supports for students, like counselling services, mental health, like there's no point in having it and people not feeling they're able to go to it. So there has to be an open approach. Too often in this country, we tend to bottle up our emotions. We need to talk about these sorts of things. If you're stressed, seek support, seek help is the main message.
And some good advice from Conor Brennan there, Evelyn. I know another issue facing students in the senior cycle is that they've missed out, obviously, on regular class time. And again, the Leaving Cert was unclear for months, and the fifth years are bystanders in all of it, trying to work out what it means for them. And then you have the TY students, and their year has been completely disrupted.
I know, and it's supposed to be slightly the fun, interesting year, an important year for many. But, you know, with no work experience or limited opportunities, the musicals, the trips, all that kind of stuff has all had to be changed. But, you know, teachers and school authorities, they're very aware of this group. And Owen Walsh is a teacher at the Lichéile School in Tyrrellstown in Dublin 15. He's a passionate advocate for the TY programme. And he spoke to me about the value of doing the TY year first and then how it's been disrupted, but how they're trying to deal with and support the TY students this year.
It offers an opportunity for students and teachers to focus on really valuable and fresh kind of learning opportunities and being able to do them in new ways and exciting ways without those kind of confinements of a state exam. Transition year offers brilliant opportunities for teamwork. One opportunity, I suppose, that in our particular case that is, you know, a really vibrant and exciting one is a musical. Another one is work experience and being able to tap into local business and explore areas or careers that may be of interest to the students. Oftentimes ruling out things, I know that was my own experience and has been for several of our students where they go and do one work experience. So absolutely not, never going to do that. And then, of course, other people then kind of almost find their calling then in the work experience and go, yeah, that's exactly it, and really helps them in their choices for Leaving Cert. Yeah, so I suppose looking at it now, last year's TYs had a lot of the benefits of the year from a lot of the trips leading up to Christmas, and then the COVID effect came in, and I suppose it was really challenging. For this year's TYs, I suppose TY in particular, the group work, the teamwork, has been more of a challenge. One of the big concerns for us this year is trying to maintain the connection with our students and with each other. So we tried to have group sessions as a TY group twice a week. We have it on a Tuesday and on a Friday. We kind of check in, have some fun. But the variety of reasons that students can or cannot connect on a given day, there's a lot of responsibilities for that age group. It's an exciting age. That's what makes transition year so vibrant and exciting. But it's also age they often have extra responsibility, especially at a time like this at home with younger siblings or things like that. But I suppose it has to be taken in the context that is life experience. That is them growing, gaining experience. So there's a positive element for them in that sense. There's been an increase definitely in anxiety amongst all students, I suppose amongst the whole community. And we've tried to, I suppose, support each other through that. Across the whole school, we have a good pastoral support system with our chaplain and our guidance counsellor and the year heads and the tutor. And it's a whole school approach, looking at the kind of holistic development and growth of the students. In TY, we have a group of TYs who have been working on their Young Social Innovators project around the area of mental health. And as part of that, they've created an Instagram sharing nuggets to promote positive mental health. They've also created a video. So there's a few kind of explicit things there that are trying to promote positive mental health and reaching out in keeping with our ethos of caring for each other.
Owen Walsh there, who's the TY teacher at Lichéile School. I also got to speak to Brendan Kelly, who's the Professor of Psychiatry at Trinity College there. He's the author of many titles, including his new book, which has just been published this week, called The Science of Happiness by Gill Books. So it means he's knee deep, really, in this area of research at the moment. And he says that lockdown has reminded us of the vital roles that school play and the structure of school life and what it offers our young people. Here, Professor Kelly tells me more.
It's a very tough time for teenagers. The open acknowledgement of this is really good. It's really, really helpful for young people. It's helpful for their parents. So their parents know that even though they, parents and the young people, are trying their best, it can still be a struggle. In terms of actions, it is important to emphasize to young people the importance of the basics, getting lots of sleep, you know, watching their diet, watching their exercise, and staying in touch. The other thing that's really helpful is to remind young people to talk with each other about the difficulties that they're facing. Sometimes peer-to-peer time spent together on social media or however can be really, really helpful.
how do we safeguard, I suppose I'm thinking of social media in particular, make sure that it's a positive experience for teenagers? Because there's such wonderful things about social media. It's really come through in the last year in a positive way, but there are, of course, the obvious downsides.
Yeah, we tend to emphasize the negatives of social media, particularly people like me in their mid-40s. To be honest, don't really understand it or feel it the way young people do. There is so much that is positive and has helped young people to reach out. I find we need to trust teenagers a lot more than we do in their use of social media. They tend to be more savvy than we give them credit for. That said, as parents, we need to be there for them to put some limits on it. No telephones in the bedroom, certainly at nighttime. Teenagers also need to take some time away from their phones.
What for you are kind of definite red flags where somebody might need a bit more intervention and a bit more support?
First thing is, it can be very difficult for parents to know when, you know, a threshold has been reached beyond which, if you like, professional intervention is needed. The best approach is obviously to talk to your child as best as possible. Now, it's entirely possible that a teenager will leave the room and slam the door. That is not, however, the end of the discussion. No teenager leaves a room and slams a door when there's nobody sitting in the room. It is still part of the conversation and quite an intense part. Sometimes the best strategy is not to talk directly about the issue. Another approach is to talk about an anxiety or a concern that you have yourself. And they may well chime in by saying they agree or they feel the same thing. It is best to try to avoid a pitched battle. So a common thing that parents often say is that I'll take away your mobile phone unless you do this, that or the other. Saying you'll take it away is such a profound existential threat to the young person. It's like, oh, this is no longer a negotiation, this is war. So if there are intermediary steps like limiting its use, an absolute threat at that level, it's almost like it's no longer a conversation. It's now a pitched battle. So the other thing to remember is it's important that a teenager or a young person talks to somebody. It might not necessarily be the parent, but it should be a reassurance if you are aware they are talking to another adult or maybe talking to a reliable friend, even if at this point they're not discussing matters with you. So teenagers communicate in different ways and we need to create the space and the time for them to do that. Perhaps most importantly, though, children and teenagers do what their parents do. They model their behavior on us. So if we never talk about how we feel or our anxieties, neither will our children. So to a, in some senses, delightful, but in some senses, scary sense, our children behave like us more than we imagine.
Really interesting there from psychiatrist Professor Brendan Kelly. Evelyn, I know your final conversation then was with Dr. Niall Muldoon, the Ombudsman for Children, and he's actively engaged in supporting and advocating for our younger citizens.
Yes, you know, he says that we have got better at acknowledging and listening out for the voice of the child, but he says, look, we can always do better. So here Dr. Niall Muldoon discusses lockdown life for our young people.
I suppose what we're trying to do is get a sense of what children and young people are looking for, because the hashtag is more than school. We recognise children are going back, and it's not just about going back for education or to learn how to do their maths or their English. And I hear from them what's really important for them. The input we're getting from children is children that are very excited about going back. There's teenagers who are really looking forward to meeting their friends, but they're also nervous about catching the virus. They're nervous about all the hassle that goes with going back to school, which is travelling public transport. They're also worried about going back to face-to-face interactions with their teachers. You know, some people have been shy and it sort of suits them not to have to take the pressures of an open classroom. So I think it's reflective of society. I mean, education would always have been a problem area from our point of view. It was always sort of the highest number of complaints came from education, because that's where children spend most of their time interacting with the public services. But I think what we noted last year, and we're just putting together statistics for a new annual report, but what we noticed last year is we got many, many, many multiple times complaints specifically from children themselves. So around the leaving cert, around the junior cert last year, and every single one of them around that time would have been very clear that whatever other issues were going on, mental health was being impacted by the way the COVID was being dealt with. And at that stage, the uncertainty around the leaving cert, and children and young people were very much aware of each other and their friends and the way it was impacting them. But then in the broader sense, they were also aware that a lot of their friends didn't have access to IT, didn't have access to the broadband, had interrupted services. So again, teenagers are very much aware of their social group and their peers, and they just want fairness all the time. I've been fighting to get the children back to school as quickly as possible, because I think it creates that normality. That is their world. All those things are there that have nothing to do with education, but are hugely important in these children's lives. This group coming back, there's no doubt, once they feel safe and secure in the world, next September they'll fly it. And I think that's the sort of way we need to start looking at it. Kids in fourth year have lost transition year. So let's make the 6 weeks that they're back as enjoyable and as fun and as engaging as possible.
Tell me then about the kind of the voice of the child in all these conversations. Where do you rate and how do you think we've taken seriously the voice and the needs of the of children, do you think, during all this?
I don't think it's been given the priority it should have been given.
Like, were you ever consulted by NPHET at any stage, or were you brought in to talk about, from your perspective, representing young people?
No, I've never been engaged with any of the organisations in that regard. I would have written to different ministers about different issues individually. There's a million children in education. NPHET and very many other subcommittees wouldn't have given the same power to the children's voice as they would to other agencies or other organisations, whether it's economic, whether it's business, unions. So children's voices are often left to the side. It's a sidebar, or it's a consequence of something, a decision that's been made somewhere else. I think they're trying to do better with that. I think they're trying to move forward in that regard, but I do think it's an afterthought most of the time.
And that is Dr. Niall Muldoon ending that report from Evelyn O'Rourke. We'll take a break.